Therefore, enum, this whole material world, kalashanam, is moving because of time eternal. Jagat, moving forward, this whole universe. Pashanti, observe. Suryaha, those who are intelligent by admission of the truth. Na, not. Rishanti, become jubilant. Na, nor. Shoshanti, lament. Tatra, in such. Yuyang, all of you demigods. Apanditaha, not very learned. Having forgotten that you are working under eternal time. All right, translation. Seeing the movements of time, those who are cognizant of the real truth neither rejoice nor lament for different circumstances. Therefore, because you are jubilant due to your victory, you should be considered not very learned. So you can repeat. See the movements of time. Those who are cognizant of the real truth, neither rejoice nor lament for different circumstances. Therefore, because you are jubilant due to your victory, you should be considered not very learned. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.Z. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Pali Maharaj knew that Indra, King of Heaven, was extremely powerful, certainly more powerful than he himself. Nonetheless, Pali Maharaj challenged Indra by saying that Indra was not a very learned person. In Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, text 11, Krishna rebuked Arjuna by saying, Asochanan vasochas chwam pagyavaram javashashe gathasana gathasunscha nanushochanti pandaha. While speaking learned words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor the dead. Thus, as Krishna challenged Arjuna by saying he was not a pandit or a learned person, Pali Maharaj also challenged King Indra and his associates. In this material world, everything happens under the influence of time. Consequently, for a learned person who sees how things are taking place, there is no question of being sorry or happy because of the waves of material nature. After all, since we are being carried away by these waves, what is the meaning of being jubilant or morose? One who is fully conversant with the laws of nature is never jubilant or morose because of nature's activities. In Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, text 14, Krishna advises that one be tolerant. Tams tatikshishva parita. Following this advice of Krishna's, one should not be morose or unhappy because of circumstantial changes. This is the symptom of a devotee. A devotee carries out his duty in Krishna consciousness and is never unhappy in awkward circumstances. He has full faith that in such circumstances, Krishna protects his devotee. Therefore, a devotee never deviates from his prescribed duty of devotional service. The material qualities of jubilation and moroseness are present even in the demigods who are very highly situated in the upper planetary system. Therefore, when one is undisturbed by the so-called favorable and unfavorable circumstances of this material world, he should be understood to be Brahma-bhuta, or self-realized, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita in the 18th chapter, text 54. Brahma-bhuta-pasana-nashokshati-nakongshati. One who is transcendentally situated once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. When one is undisturbed by material circumstances, he should be understood to be on the transcendental stage above the reactions of the three modes of material Haridam kalarashanam jagat pashanti surayaha arishanti nashochanti tatra yuyam apanditaha. Om Ganati Madanda Shah Gadanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Om Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So this is a very interesting verse. Of course, in understanding this verse, it's important to understand about the time factor. This is, of course, one of the topics in the Bhagavad Gita, or the five topics of the Bhagavad Gita, according to Baladeva Vidyabhushana, which is called time. And this is exhibited quite nicely by Krishna in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which is called the Universal Form. And Universal Form ultimately is described by Krishna as Kalo Asmi, and also another description is Mrityu Sarva Parashchaham. I'm all devouring death, and I am the time factor. And in this Universal Form, Arjuna sees all the different soldiers, in fact, everybody entering into the mouths of the Universal Form and destroying everything. And there's many other verses in the Bhagavad Gita that illustrate this, like Utva, Utva, Praliyate, that again and again there is this manifestation, again and again destruction, and then the Sahasra Yuga Paryantam, you know, about 1,000 ages together, is the duration of Brahma's one day, 1,000 ages is the duration of Brahma's one night, and the Prabhupada explains that Brahma lives for 365 years, and after that, as described by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, or as actually Prabhupada was reading from his commentary, the whole show is only temporary. Or as our good friend William Shakespeare says, life's a poor player that struts and frets his time upon the stage and then is heard no more. So that's very interesting. I especially like Prabhupada's expression, the whole show is only temporary. It's like a show that, you know, you open the curtains, not the beading curtains, of course, but let's say when I was young, I would go to Broadway. You know Broadway? Broadway is like the theater capital of the world, also in London, too. And we see these different shows like Hair, which is an interesting show, and other Broadway musicals, and when it was over, all the different characters, they would, what's it called, a stage call or something like that, they would bow down and everybody would clap, you have a good show, and then they go back to their real life. So in the same way, everything here is temporary. Nasato vijite bhavo na bhavo vijite sataha ubayarapi drishtavantas tvanios tatvadarshabhi. And that statement states that the sages, or those who are intelligent, those who are sagacious, that's where the sage, the word sage comes, sagacious. Those who are sagacious, they see that those things are temporary, are, in ultimate sense, unreal. I mean, they're real in one sense, like the soap bubble is real in one sense, but it's not so significant. It has no real ultimate significance or ultimate reality or eternal reality. And only those things that continue to exist are considered to be real, according to the sages. Of course, it's Krishna's statement in the Gita. So, therefore, you come to the point of not lamenting about anything in this material world, which is what Prabhupada quotes 1854 in the Gita, you know, Brahma-Bhuta Prasanatma, Soshati Nakanshati. So this Brahma-Bhuta, Prabhupada defines the word Brahma-Bhuta in the Gita as being one with Brahman, which is quite interesting, isn't it? Being one with Brahman. And then you just read that, well, oneness? I thought we were supposed to be devotees. But actually, Prabhupada defines that as this understanding that one's one in quality with Brahman, not one is one in identity or quantity with Brahman. So there's the Supreme Brahman, of course, Namami Vamsa Jiva Loka Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. We're Angsa, we're part and parcel of Krishna. So we're Brahman, but we're small Brahman and Krishna is the big Brahman. So Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. So one who is actually on the stage of Brahman then he's Prasadatma, he's very happy. Prasadatma. And in the next verse, 1855, Krishna further clarifies what it means to be on the stage of Brahman. 1855 is a very important verse in the Gita, Bhaktimam Abhijanati Yavanyas Chasmi Tadvataha, right? That means only by devotion can I be known. So Krishna's actually talking about what it actually means to be on the stage of Brahman. Of course, we understand Brahman has three features. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaneti, Shabdite, the impersonal Brahman, or not actually impersonal, but appears impersonal. Then there's the Paramatma, and then Bhagavan. But Krishna is actually, in the 1855, he tells us how to come to the Brahman platform. Bhaktimam Abhijanati. Only by bhakti can one come to this platform. Or one know me as I am. That's 1855 in the Bhagavad Gita. So let's go back to Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. So one is on this Brahman platform, he's Prasanatma. And Shochati Nikanchati, he's not hankering for anything or lamenting about anything or just feeling joyful as described here because he's victorious or depressed because he's not victorious. And so one would simply get the impression from this verse that he becomes like a stone. But it's not really like that. One who is on the Brahman platform does actually have emotions. And he does sometimes hanker, and he does sometimes lament. But Prabhupada here in this verse states, it's not due to the, let me read the exact thing. One who is fully conversant with the laws of nature is never jubilant or morose. And here's the operative phrase. Because of nature's activities. In other words, he's not hankering or lamenting because of nature's activities. But he may be hankering or lamenting due to the spiritual ras, the spiritual taste. His spiritual emotions. And one should never criticize a devotee for having spiritual emotions. And let's give some examples of that. And then one example that comes to mind is the example of Ramchandra Puri. Ramchandra Puri was the disciple of Madhavendra Puri. Now, Madhavendra Puri, of course, he's the source in our sampradaya of ecstatic love of God, in the conjugal or the higher rasas. So that's what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says. So Madhavendra Puri, when he was getting ready to leave this world, and he manifested this mood of vipralamba, which means intense separation. In fact, of course, Rupa Goswami says that the price of pure devotional service is hankering. It's interesting, isn't it? That's the price. Or Prabhupada one time expressed that. He says, tears. Tears. So, or even my godbrother, Guru Govinda Maharaj, said about his Orissa Bhuvaneshwar temple, he said, we're opening up a crying temple. So, anyway, intense hankering. It's interesting. Intense hankering is actually a cause of pure devotional service. Of course, intense hankering for something material is actually a detriment to devotional service, according to Rupa Goswami, isn't it? Ajahara prayasa chava java nima rajana sandhisa lalyum cha sadbir bhakti vinashati. That's the Upadeshamrita statement, that intense hankering, volume basically means intense hankering, is a cause of deviation or falling down from devotional service. And at the same time, intense hankering is the cause of achieving pure devotional service. So getting back to the story of Madhavendra Puri. So Madhavendra Puri, he was experiencing, at least manifest, he always experienced, but at least in his final pastimes, he exhibited this intense mood of separation, of hankering for Krishna. Oh my Lord, I have not reached Mathura. And he was crying out like that. And his disciple, Ramchandra Puri, he had the audacity to preach to his spiritual master about Brahman. In fact, he even recited this one verse that we just recited in the Bhagavad Gita, 1854. Brahma-bhuta prashanatma nashochati nakanchati samat sarveshu bhuteshu madhubhaktim labhate param. He said, my dear Guru Maharaj, don't you remember the Bhagavad Gita where it says you should neither hanker or lament or be situated in Brahman? And of course, the story goes, and that's from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Madhavendra Puri not only did not accept that instruction from his disciple, but chastised or even yelled at his disciple, and he said, I have not reached Brahman, not reached Mathura. And this was the verse actually spoken by Srimati Radharani that he was quoting at the time of leaving his body. And he said, this fool has come to harass me. Get out of here. I don't want to see your face anymore. And because of that offense to his spiritual master, Ramchandra Puri became a critic of Vaishnavas, even a critic of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He would feed the devotees too much and criticize them for eating too much. And then he would eat too much and whatever. And if the devotees ate too little, he would criticize them for eating too little. So, anyway, so that's the story of Ramchandra Puri, who offended his spiritual master, Madhavendra Puri. So spiritual motions are not to be decried. They are to be enhanced. And there's actually some interesting stories about emotions, even in the material world, the Prabhupada stories that I'd like to tell. This is just about the material world, not about spiritual emotions. Once upon a time, this is a story with Sridhananda Maharaj. Sridhananda Maharaj was in a car with Srila Prabhupada, and he was just thinking, in one sense, about the life that he left behind. He even talks about the story, that, not so much lamenting, but just thinking about his previous ashram. Sridhananda Maharaj was married for a small amount of time. Actually, he told me the best preaching he had ever had in his whole life was he convinced his wife to let him take sannyasa. It was like 2 days nonstop of preaching. But anyway, so what happened is that he was just thinking about it, and Prabhupada understood what Sridhananda Maharaj was thinking, and he sort of chastised him and said, one should not think about their past. This was in a car, and Sridhananda Maharaj was shocked about this. So we don't lament about the past, we don't hanker for the future. And also Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, we live in the present. Trust no future, however pleasant, and don't lament about the past. I don't remember the exact words on that. But anyway, we live at present serving Krishna. And then another interesting story, it was told by Tamal Krishnamars. I was listening to this the other day on the Prabhupada Memory Series, that Tamal Krishnamars was with Prabhupada one time, and Prabhupada was preaching or talking to his son Vrindavan Day. Prabhupada had several sons, and that was one of his sons. And Prabhupada was saying things that appeared to be lamentation about his past ashram. And Prabhupada said, your mother was very good, and she was a perfect wife, and it was my fault, I was very bad, like that. And he appeared to be lamenting about this. And Tamal Krishnamars was thinking, what Prabhupada lamenting about this? But actually, he understood later on that Prabhupada's so-called lamentation was to help his son not be bitter about the whole situation. Because Prabhupada understood that his son was bitter. And actually, the devotees told me that when they met Prabhupada's family members, they were actually upset that Prabhupada had left the family at such a stage like that. Of course, we understand. Prabhupada said that's like the transcendental cheating. In any case, so that was another story about lamentation, which is quite interesting. So let's talk about spiritual emotions. and how to increase spiritual emotions. Because we are emotional entities. And that is our nature. The reason we have material emotions is the material emotions are reflections of the spiritual emotions, like we find in the 15th chapter of the Gita. The material world is described as a reflection of a banyan tree, which is upside down. And the branches are going down and the roots are going up. So everything that's here in this world, including emotions, are there in the spiritual world. In fact, not only are they there in the spiritual world, but they can be classified in different ways. Just like Rupa Goswami, he actually took, even though there's not, in the original Vedas, there's not an elaborate description in terms of the classifications of different emotions, like Rupa Goswami is given, but Rupa Goswami took from this Bart Mooney, who was actually classified all the material emotions. He was like into the anyway. He analyzed theatrical things and everything like that. So he took from him his whole system of classification and spiritualized it, which was quite interesting. Even though you don't really find that classification before Rupa Goswami, the different analyses of the rasas and the classifications of the rasas. They're there, but the classification is not there. In other words, the description of different devotees who had different rasas, or Krishna who was experiencing, he's the Vishaya, and the devotees in the Ashraya, but sometimes it's witches. Maybe I should describe what that means, Vishaya and Ashraya. Vishaya means basically the enjoyer or the focal point, and the Ashraya means the repository. So, even though it's described elaborately about the different relationships, the conjugal relationship, the parental relationship, the friendship relationship, it's not really gone into an analytical depth like Rupa Goswami has done. So Rupa Goswami actually took a material analysis, which is really interesting, a material analysis which was prominent at that time of rasas, and he brought it into the spiritual realm in terms of his whole description of rasa theology. And this is why what we have in the Nectar of Devotion, the law book of the Krishna consciousness movement. We have the five rasas, and then descriptions of rasavas, and descriptions of that means conflicting rasas. And sometimes rasavas can actually be tasteful, and sometimes it's not tasteful. It takes someone who's very expert. And that's the final analyses in the Nectar of Devotion of Bhakti Rasa Mrita Sindhu. So, because material emotions are simply reflections of spiritual emotions, so sometimes analyses that are applicable to the material world are also applicable to the spiritual world. And so he describes different types of bhavas or emotions, and they're very strong emotions. There's the vibhava, and I'm not going to give a whole description of all these things. Vibhava means that which stimulates your emotion, some object, either Krishna or something related with Krishna. And in the material world, he gives the example sometimes, like if a mother sees her child, that stimulates her emotion. And then there's the anubhav, the emotions, or even activities that follow, the voluntary activities that follow the stimulation of the emotion, like, dancing, or even sometimes drooling. Drooling, actually, which is considered inauspicious, or actually muchi, is actually considered a spiritual emotion, or a spiritual manifestation emotion. Then you have anubhava, the sattvic bhava, the eightfold emotions. Then you have the vyabhachari or sanchari bhavas, which are 33 uncontrollable emotions. It's pretty amazing, isn't it? And so a devotional service is meant to stimulate those emotions. Now, of course, we may not be on that platform right now, but even in the performance of our devotional service, we can experience material spiritual emotions. For example, if one is doing deity worship and it's the time for the aarti and you look like you're running late, you know, that's what you should have watches, you can experience anxiety that I'm late for the aarti, right? And that's a spiritual, it's purifying. Or you can experience anxiety over the plight of the conditioned souls. Or like Prabhupada, sometimes in the beginning days, if a devotee left the movement, Prabhupada would cry. And that's it. That's an emotion, but it's not a material emotion. Because it's focused on pleasing Krishna. So even apart from the, you know, these bhavas that are described by Srila Rupa Goswami, taking part in Muni's system of classification, that we can experience emotions within Krishna consciousness. We can experience attachment for the spiritual master, or desire to serve Krishna, or attachment to Harinam. So all these emotions are meant to be even increased in Krishna consciousness, because this is really what Krishna consciousness is. It's an emotional movement. I mean, we have our philosophy. Yes, the philosophy is there. But really, Krishna consciousness is meant to be executed with the heart. With the heart. I mean, like Prabhupada said, devotional service is executed with the subtle body. That means the emotions. And of course, mind, intelligence, full. And not full, single mind, intelligence, and ego. But the heart. Because that's where the soul is. And so we see that Prabhupada was always exhibiting different emotions. Even one pastime I heard yesterday was, was being told by Ravatanandana, who used to be a sannyasi. I mean, it's very interesting, these Prabhupada memories. I request the devotees to watch them or listen to them regularly, because you really get a chance to understand Prabhupada more. So there was some sort of deity installation, and it was in India, and Alkayananda was taking sannyasa at that particular time. So what happened is that in this particular deity installation, the devotees didn't have the proper opulent paraphernalia. There were no flowers, there were no fruits. They just had some stainless steel containers to put the deities in. And Prabhupada, at least the way he described it, Prabhupada got extremely angry. And he said, "What is this? No flowers, no fruits." And he said he never saw Prabhupada so angry in his life. No flowers or fruits. I mean, you know, we're not going to install these deities. And of course, the Prabhupada was not angry at him, but Prabhupada was angry at the devotees. Because now, why was he angry? Not because we get angry. We get angry because we're frustrated, you know, lack of control. Let's say, but if I was in a similar circumstance, I would probably get angry because people weren't listening to me or showing proper respect or whatever. But Prabhupada, he was angry because it wasn't showing proper respect to Krishna. It was a deity installation. There were no flowers, or very few flowers or fruits. So Prabhupada was extremely angry. And then finally, you know, there were the TV reporters there and so forth. Prabhupada was angry even in front of the TV reporters and everybody else. Has anyone else heard this particular memory? It's a very interesting memory. And then, but finally Prabhupada says, "Then, all right, we're going to do the fire sacrifice." But Prabhupada was still angry. And so when Ravatananda, he was doing the fire sacrifice rather than Prajuna. Was traditionally Prajuna would do it because Prajuna was expert in Sanskrit. And Ravatananda wasn't so expert in Sanskrit, so his, when he pronounced the Mangalacharna prayers, he wasn't breaking up the syllables properly, because there's actually a way to do that in Sanskrit. You know, Om Ganat, Tivananda Shah, and when you get everyone to repeat, you know, you stop and get everyone to repeat. And Prabhupada was like, he was still so upset that Prabhupada stopped him like every other mantra or every other word, and no. Finally, you know, after the fire sacrifice is over, Prabhupada walks out, and it was an interesting pastime. Prabhupada walks out, and the devotees, somehow they didn't have the right etiquette towards Prabhupada. So Prabhupada had to wait out in the rain. You heard the story? Yeah, Prabhupada had to wait out in the rain and go through the crowd, push his way through the crowd, and then finally the car comes. And Prabhupada says, I hope you got some, took some prasadam from the festival. And the devotee said, well, we're just making simple prasadam. Prabhupada said, it's a deity installation. Got to bring this, so the devotee gets the prasadam. It was Nanda Kumar who was driving the car. He goes, gets the prasadam for Prabhupada, puts it on the back seat, drives, and then drives to where Prabhupada was staying. And and in the meantime, the prasadam falls on the floor in the back. So this is like one mistake after another devotees are making. And so the prasadam falls on the floor, and then he prays that Prabhupada's not going to ask for the prasadam. And he goes upstairs, and Prabhupada said, well, where's the prasadam? And Prabhupada said, Nanda Kumar said, it fell on the floor. Prabhupada said, just bring it anyway. So it was the day that he really got chastised a lot by Srila Prabhupada. And so, of course, that chastising, that emotion, is spiritual. It's not that, like, we get angry because of frustration. You know, jayate vishido sangha, sangas teshu pajayate, sangat sanjayate kama kama krodha pajayate. Because we're contemplating something, we don't get it, we're frustrated. But Prabhupada gets angry because it's Krishna's desire. So there was another story listening about Tamal Krishnamurti's problem of saying you have no intelligence, you're just hopeless, you're no brain. But Prabhupada's chastisement is for the benefit of the person, and also it's a manifestation of Krishna's will. So we can't equate the devotee's emotions with the material emotions like Indra is experiencing here, you know, jubilation that he's going to be victorious. So, anyway, so these are some things about emotions. We should also have spiritual emotions. Of course, our anger, we have to be careful not thinking our emotions are spiritual all the time. We have to be very careful about that. Like sometimes we find, at least in the old days, people would get angry, like temple presidents or sannyasis would get angry, and they would think that their emotions are coming from Krishna, but they're not actually coming from Krishna, they were just coming from their own frustration or false ego. So we should be introspective enough to understand when our emotions are spiritual. And we do have spiritual emotions, even in the beginning stage. Even if that emotion is just like, let's say, shadow attachment, or not even para attachment, according to Rupa Goswami. That's, you know, it's an indication of some spirituality. Okay, so any questions or comments? We have 2 minutes left or 3 minutes left. Yes?
Since the mind is designated as thinking, feeling, and willing, what is the discriminatory capacity to separate thinking, feeling, and willing mentally, materially,
yeah,
and experiencing the same thinking, feeling, and willing on the spiritual platform?
That's called intelligence, which Prabhupada describes as the form direction of the super soul. So our intelligence should be firmly fixed by reading Prabhupada's books and, you know, other Vaishnava literatures to be able to discriminate. Prabhupada said discrimination is the better part of valor. To be able to discriminate whether something or our thinking, feeling, and willing is actually material or spiritual. That's a very important point, to be able to distinguish between matter and spirit. One has to develop that. But one only develops that by study and understanding this philosophy. Because the devotee is sometimes described as a tortoise. And the tortoise knows when to pull in his limbs and knows when to put them out. The Bhagavad Gita talks about this, of course, too. That when there's some material emotions or material attachments, then we just pull our limbs in, or material attractions, we just pull our limbs in. But when there's something spiritual to be expressed, I mean, devotees should have loving relationships with each other. It's not that, you know, you're just a spirit soul, you're Brahman, you know, we don't care about you, you know, whatever happens, happens. It's just your karma, Prabhu. Your karma or your desire or your whatever. But we should have emotions or feelings for each other. So we have to really cultivate spiritual feelings. But in the association of devotees, other devotees can help us understand which feelings are spiritual, which feelings are mundane or material. So any other questions? Yes?
Is it possible, we don't have spiritual emotions yet, and there may be a need for anger, like if you weren't out of that situation, but that little screw-up on the devotee's part, that our material emotions may be used by Krishna, the guru, in order to set something straight?
Yeah, I guess the guru can do that, but we should be very, very careful about not spiritualizing. In other words, thinking our feelings are spiritual when they're not really spiritual. But we should cultivate emotions. I mean, attachment. We should be attached to the program in the temple. We should be attached to hearing and chanting. But we have to be extremely careful when dealing with others, especially with anger. I think anger is the main problem, the main one we have to be careful of. Of course, lust, anger, greed, illusion, I mean, all those other nice things. Yeah. You know, especially with those. But I think, you know, if we love the other devotees, want them to be Krishna conscious, have intense desire, then we should increase those emotions. Okay. Thank you all for joining us.